This is November 13th, 2024, interview of Tom Montan by Emma Herring for the Cooperstown Graduate Program's Research and Fieldwork course, recorded at Sculpture Space in Utica. Okay, Tom, so can you start by telling me your journey to becoming an artist?
Wow, okay, yeah, boy. That goes way back to my young childhood, basically. You know, just fascinated with everything that was sort of physical and pretty, and you know, I remember as a kid making a monster mask out of, I don't know, out of something, and it was just, I was so fascinated that my hands could actually do this. So, but you know, when I was younger, I wasn't serious. I was not serious about art at all. It was not a serious pursuit at all. It was just something I did as, you know, you do it in school, you do it here, you do it there, and that's sort of what I did. I never really took it as a profession necessarily till I was a bit older, but. I remember in college I had a girlfriend who was an artist, and she was really into the art department. She was a sculptor, and that brought me over to the art department. This was my last year of college. So I got really turned on to art at that point in time, and I took a lot of art classes at that point. I took a lot of sculpting classes. I took a lot of painting classes. I did a lot of stuff then, but then, you know, I really, my path didn't take me down the path of going to art school, so I went and did other things, and you know, earned money different ways. But then after college, I continued. You know, that was my hobby at the, you know, after hours kind of thing. So at that point, I was doing a lot of sculpting, a lot of different kinds of things. You know, playing around with materials, playing around with all kinds of different things at that point, and that was kind of where I lived for many years.
So what was your major in college before?
Sociology. I was a sociology major, so very profitable and exciting thing. But that path took me down the path of working in a bookstore and working my way up through this bookstore chain and running a large bookstore operation out in California for many years. But the art was still there. I mean, it was still there. I was on boards of art boards and all kinds of things, you know, supporting the arts where I could. I never was interested, honestly, in selling my work, because I always felt like it would change what I was doing. You know, if I was having to do something for somebody else or do something that I knew would be sellable, it didn't really inspire me that much.
Can you describe a very formative experience you've had as an artist?
Formative? I mean, I think it would probably be those college days that I was talking about, where I discovered the art department. Oh my God, there's a whole world out here that was focused fully on studio art, and that was quite formative for me. And again, I sort of focused on that from that point forward. So,
what is your preferred medium for creating art?
It's evolved over the years. Okay, when I was younger, I did a lot of sculpting, and basically my whole thing was casting. I loved to make molds and to cast things. Figurative has always been my jam. I like to do figurative pieces. So I do body parts, and hands, arms, you know, twisting torsos, those kinds of things, out of clay, and then I would cast them and do this thing called it was waste molds, where you'd make these molds. It'd be a one-time mold. You'd fill them up and break away the mold, and there was your piece. That was what I did for many years. And you know, evolved from, you know, small pieces to bigger and bigger and bigger, and I was casting in concrete. And frankly, after a while, I just got really exhausted. It's a lot of work. It's heavy work. It's heavy work. So, you know, we had this flash forward to probably about 15 years after college. My young family at that time, my daughter was probably 4 years old. My son was probably seven. We went to Europe and did this whole tour of the art scene in England and Italy and all over the place. And I remember going to the National Portrait Gallery in England and getting so turned on by portraiture and just, you know, the 2D instead of 3. I was really a 3D artist for a long time, and then I became I got inspired by this 2D work, and it was quite moving, actually. And I mean, really, speaking of formative, I guess that was formative. I mean, it really brought tears to my eyes, literally. It was like, this is really powerful stuff. I mean, if you see big, large figurative work that's done well, it is quite moving, actually. It can be. Anyway, so I said, I'm tired of lugging around concrete. I'm tired of these big sculptures. I'm tired of doing this. So I said, I'm going to become a painter. So that was my choice. I said, okay, well, I'm going to learn to paint. And so from that point forward, this is probably, I want to say, 2000s, early 2000s, I began to focus strictly on 2D work and learn how to do oil painting and figurative and realistic portraiture.
Who are some of your artistic influences?
Oh my gosh. Chuck Close comes to mind for some reason. He's one of the people that I just was really fascinated with as a younger artist. And Rodin is also, as far as 3D work goes, I really loved his work as well. I guess in that breath, Camille Claudel was his lover, and she, I think she was probably maybe more talented than he was. So yeah, I mean, those are kind of things that inspired me back. You know, just it's the figurative, the realist figurative artist that really inspired me.
Can you tell me about some of your work experience before Sculpture Space in the art world?
In the art world, well, so basically, what happened is for many, many years, I ran a large chain of independent bookstores out in California, 7 or 8 bookstores. This is in the time of Amazon just came on the scene, at Borders and Barnes and Noble, the big chain bookstores were revving their engines big, and so the poor little independent was getting squeezed, and so we fought the good fight, and they're still in existence today, but I'm not there. I said, this is too much for me. I can't do this anymore. So I said, I'm going to take a year off and figure out what I want to do. And so I took that year off, and what I did for that year is I painted for the entire year. I just painted and painted and painted and painted and painted. After that, I said, I'm kind of a person of the world. I don't really want to be in my studio all the time, because artists in general, I think, it's a very solitary, very solitary thing. So I said, I really want to put my managerial skills and my skills to use in the world. So I started working in nonprofit arts in California. So I worked at a small arts center out in Sonoma, California, and then moved to a larger operation in Sebastopol, California, and ran a lot of their operations out there. And they just, you know, so that's how I got my feet in the door of arts management. I learned on the go.
Can you describe your experience working at this bookstore in California?
Which part of it? I don't know. I mean, I started as a bookstore. I mean, that's what I did. I sold books behind the counter. I loved it. I mean, that was exactly my jam. I loved it. People coming in talking about all kinds of cool things, and very nice. But I mean, I was also restless there, and so I worked my way in. And there was some changes in the ownership and whatever of the organization. They needed a leader to lead the whole thing. So for many years, I did marketing for them. I was their marketing director for many, many years. It kept me very busy for a long time. But then, as things changed, I was pushed up to run the entire company, which consisted of 6 bookstores, I think 2 or 3 coffee shops. When I first started, there was a music store, which closed down because they sold cassette tapes and CDs, which now was sort of no longer. So, yeah.
So when did you come to work at Sculpture Space?
2017, I believe, is when I started, 16, 17, somewhere in there. So almost 8 to 9 years now. And the reason I decided to do this is my wife is still in California, but we decided that I'd move out here and to work in the arts, which I enjoy doing. Sculpture is a passion of mine, as I've said, and it just seems like such a cool thing. I mean, it really is a cool place. And so found the job, a job offering, applied for the job, and you know, they said, yes, we want you. And so we sort of figured, well, I'll move out here for a couple, 3 years. We'll buy some houses, we'll become landlords, and that kind of thing. Didn't quite work that way. 8 years later, I'm still here, and Karen's still in California at this point, which is fine. I mean, we're back and forth, and we're finding our way to get, you know, resolution there soon. But, yeah, so, what was I going to say? Something about something. What was the question? I've lost my train of thought, totally.
That's okay.
So you're saying why Sculpture Space? Why did I come here? Or?
Yeah. How did you find out about the job if you were all the way out in California?
Job boards. I mean, it was up online. I discovered that, and we were looking around. I owned property in Oneonta before many, many years ago, we bought property down there, so I knew the area. I knew I liked the area. I mean, the area is really quite a cool place to be. And so we sort of did a, you know, mile searches around Oneonta and found little old Utica. And the houses here were very cheap. Yes. And there's a reason for that. It's a challenged community. But yeah, it's also a beautiful community as well. So.
Would you like to talk more about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I got here, I mean, houses were so, I mean, coming from California, I mean, you can probably imagine coming from where you came from. You know, houses here are, you know, very, very inexpensive comparatively to other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. It's partly because the economy of this area is a bit downtrodden. It's been boom and bust. Utica is a very interesting area because it used to be one of the, I think it was like the sixth largest city in the country at one point. But you know, it's in its heyday it was big, and then things moved elsewhere, and so you have this big beautiful city, and it is a big beautiful city, but it's, you know, minimally inhabited. It's probably 60,000 people in a town that should be about 180,000. So yeah, so houses were cheap, and they're beautiful. So.
What is Sculpture Space's relationship with the community of Utica?
Evolving. How's that? I think it's an evolving organization and place, because back in the day, we're almost 50 years old. Okay, so 50 years ago, it was a rundown, rundown, pointing some pictures on the wall here, rundown sort of manufacturing, part of the manufacturing bust. It was a boom and then bust. And so it was a facility that was not being really used for manufacturing anymore, and became inhabited by artists and people that wanted to get together and do things. So back in the day, it was really, really kind of hidden, I guess, is what I would say. And in that hiding, the community didn't really know about it, nor did they really care. Artists would come here and do their work, and it would be sort of, you know, under the, you know, basically in a big old rusty old building. But you know, as time has gone on, we've made changes over the years. We used to have board members that would house artists. They'd go to their board members' houses and live, and those kinds of things. We've formalized over the years. We now have a facility where the artists live, and so it's very, very formal. I mean, much more formal than it used to be. And I think it's much more presentable as a place than it used to be, too. So people would come in, and we have a much more deeper, I think, roots in the community. People, you know, have grown up with Sculpture Space, and so we're becoming more known, I think, locally. So.
Can you tell me a little bit about the founding of Sculpture Space?
Yeah. Basically, Charlie Fisher, whose family owned the building that Sculpture Space is in, was a young man when he started going to school over at Pratt Munson. Right? It was only Munson at the time, it wasn't Pratt. Munson, they had an art school over across town. And he started taking sculpture classes with a gentleman named John von Bergen, who was the professor at the time. They connected and had a really great connection. And Charlie said to John, "You got to come over and see my parents' place. They have all these machines. They got welders. They've got big saws. They have, you know, a foundry. They have, you know, cool stuff." And for the artists at the time, the art of that time was big, heavy metal, steel metal. And so this was the perfect place for that kind of thing. And so John and Charlie would come to Sculpture Space. I mean, come to it was a Utica Engine, Steam Engine, and Boiler Works at the time. They'd come in the middle of the night and do their art. It was kind of their studio at night. And so, but then as time led on, basically it became more formalized, and they created their own organization. They had a board of directors, and again, that's when, instead of just being two guys working at a funny place in the middle of the night, is they began inviting people in from all over the country, mainly from New York City, and they said, "Come up to Utica, because you can do all this cool stuff that's super, much cheaper than you could in New York City at the time." So it was a facility for that kind of work. So,
can you talk a little bit about the mission of Sculpture Space?
To support artists. That's it. I mean, to support sculptors mainly. And the whole vision was to find the resources, the resources of time, and some money. And again, we have a fully functioning studio and a fully functioning house where people can live and work. And we don't charge our selected artists anything to be here, and we pay them a small stipend to be here. So that's what we do.
How has the organization changed over time?
What I was talking about, sort of the reclusive kind of hidden thing, it's changed much more now. I think we're much more public. We do more things. We try to get into the community more, and And sort of we've shined up a bit over the years to where we're a little bit more more open to public engagement, I guess.
Can you explain a little bit about your position and role at Sculpture Space?
I'm sort of the ringleader of fun, I guess. There's a lot of fun that happens here. I mean, it's basically trying to organize small little pieces. I mean, we have artists that come in, which is our main constituency who we're trying to serve. But we have a constituency of leaders and members of our board and people that have invested a lot of time and energy and money into the space, and so it's keeping, you know, that group, the leaders, the artists, and then the community at large. And so how do you keep all that humming together and people being happy with one another? And it's not always easy, but it's you know, it's challenging but fun. It's fun.
What does a typical day-to-day workday look like at Sculpture Space for you?
The beauty about this job is there's no typical day. I mean, I mean that seriously. I mean, some days it's all about interacting with artists and figuring out what they need and trying to work with their needs. And other days it's sitting behind my desk and filling out grants and doing paperwork, paying bills, those kinds of things. Other days I'm in the community trying to figure out what how we can intersect, and sometimes it's talking a lot, sometimes it's not talking at all. So.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your board and the board makeups?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's that's an evolving thing too. I think that boards, nonprofit boards, are a very interesting place to be because we have a really great board. I mean, the people that are impassioned and passionate about art. You know, I came here 8 years ago. I think the board has changed. Probably, you know. It's not totally changed, but I mean, it's the rollover of boards, of nonprofit boards, is it happens a lot, and it's a good thing. It's a healthy thing because people see different things. But we have lawyers, we have doctors, we have administrators of other organizations on our board, and that they all have a unique piece to the puzzle and help solve certain unique things. And we have actually another thing I say about our board, which is unique over other nonprofit boards, is our board requires that 1/3 of our board be art professionals. So we have a very strong artist voice on our board as well. So,
can you tell me about the Sculpture Space residency program?
Sure. Again, it's evolved, but I mean, as it is today, we have a cycle, and our cycle starts, generally speaking, this month. As a matter of fact, we send out open call to artists throughout the country and the world. Actually, it goes worldwide. And we invite artists to come join us, and they apply by sending in we call them slides, but slides are no longer virtual images of their work. They have to talk about themselves, they have to talk about what their work is and what they want to do when they're here, and that goes on for 2 months. So we have a 2-month open window of applications that closes actually the middle of January is when that window closes. At that point in time, then we open it up to, we have a review board of about 7 to 10 people. Three of those people are, generally speaking, people from across the world or the country. We choose our guest jurors based on their unique perspectives in art, and that's really the beauty of, I will say the beauty today of the Zoom process. Is that, you know, before we had to invite artists in, and that was a big process to try to get someone to come either from across the country or even across the state to join us for a review, which we could take a couple days. Now we now have a Zoom process when everything is very digital now. So we're able to do all of that virtually and get most of the review process done within, you know, people can do it on their own for about a week's time. We meet for about a day and get the decisions, and we decide on 20 artists that we invite. And they are our invited artists, and then we have another 20 that are our reserved artists in case those 20 can't come. So they're invited for the following year. So in January of this example of 2025, this January 2025, we'll invite artists to be with us for 2026. And they're here, these 20 artists, we split them up in sort of quarter them, basically. So we have 4 cohorts. There's a winter cohort, a spring cohort, a summer cohort, and a fall cohort, so much like school. And we invite about 5 per cohort. They come and they're scheduled, and when they come, they stay at our house, and we basically the residency is they're here. I mean, that's really what it is. They're here. We provide support for them. The tools, we have a lot of tools in our workshop spaces for them. We provide connections within the community, whatever that might mean. We have one open studio every single cohort. We invite community members in for potlucks from time to time. People come visit the studios if they want that. But again, we sort of, when they come, we say, this is your time to be with us. What do you need from us? And that's really what it comes down to. So really, each cohort's it's quite different. It just depends on who's there and what they want. So, yeah.
You spoke a little bit about technology and how mm-hmm. that's helped your selection process. How mm-hmm. has that helped with Sculpture Space Evolve?
Help is maybe not the right adjective I would use. I think I would say it's a challenge, and it's a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways, because when we started 50 years ago, sculpture was pretty defined as 3D images, 3D pieces that sort of sat on a plinth out in the middle of a courtyard. And, at the time it was big metal, it was I-beams, twisted I-beams, and all kinds of weird stuff going on, right? Pretty standard and fair. I mean, and people knew the tools that they needed for that project, there's other stuff going on. There's stone carving. There's all kinds of, but again, 3D was 3D was 3D. Since I've been here, in the last 8 years, I've seen things change dramatically. I mean, for a while, the big sculpture du jour was social practices, they call it, whereby it was you were sculpting with the society, and you were basically creating events and things that would have people react to, and it's very abstract, But there's conceptual artists too that do things with concepts that. It's not clearly 3D in the way that we used to understand 3D, if you know what I'm saying. So, but technology has also evolved the 3D process too. We have people who've come and used 3D printers. That's quite a tool right now. There are machines that artists use, not necessarily here, but they're called CNC routers that can be programmed to do things. Computers are interacting in many different ways with the artists more than they used to. There's audio-visual stuff with lights and sound. We had an artist here probably, I think it was about 5 years ago now. His sculptural medium was sense. So basically he created unique perspectives, and his whole thing when he was here was to talk to the immigrant community here in Utica and get memories of their homeland and create sense around that. So, each artist is different, and each the mediums are just changing rapidly. And I think I mentioned to you outside when we talked a little earlier that we had one artist who came and did virtual sculpting, which is, doing sculpture in the digital world where you don't even have a sculpture. You can see it on your device, whatever that might be, but it put it in place somewhere, but it doesn't exist, physically. So.
When these artists make these pieces, do they often take them back with them, or do they leave them here? What does that process look like?
It's catch as catch can, I guess. It depends on what the need is. We try to address what artists need. Many of our artists have done large sculptures that, and they live, across the world, literally, and can't take that on the plane with them. So we say, okay, we'll take it, and oftentimes that's what's wonderful, We'll also take things on loan from time to time. But generally speaking, most artists take what they make here and they take it with them, except for one piece. We generally ask them to leave one token piece for us, because each year we have a, called our charity, spelled C-H-A-I-R, charity, which is based on creating art out of chairs years ago, but it's sort of evolved into being sort of an art auction at this point in time. And it's always a really sought after thing in our auctions for current artists who donate a piece to us. They're often very interested in unique and different. So.
What does a studio day at Sculpture Space look like?
There's not one day. I mean, it's like today we have two artists. One artist is back in the house sick, and the other one is off in a creek casting stuff on a tree root with latex rubber. So, again, each cohort's different. Each day is different. And again, that's the beauty. That's really the beauty of this place. It's always different. Always, always, always.
Can you describe a memorable experience from your time thus far at Sculpture Space, or multiple if you have them?
So many. It's hard to pin it down. I mean, we you have just it's always nice to have, and again, I'm not going to call out any cohort, but you know, each cohort's different, and some just really jam and really jive and really you know, click. And so we had one time where it was just really a nice group, and we all got together and we did this thing called a sculpture jam, where we went out to a local college and spent the day together just putting together one sculpture in one day all together. And that was just really, yeah, that's kind of what I see, is community coming together and doing cool things like that. That was really quite neat.
What are some sources of inspiration that you personally have taken from your experiences with these artists that you've applied to your own work?
Interesting. Really interesting. So many. I don't know even how to pin that one down. I think that, I mean, for me, it's like seeing artists and talking to, you know, the many artists that kind of come through here. It's just the creative process is, I mean, it's universal, I think. I mean, is what I kind of feel about it. It's like, you know, so these people are doing art. That's their process. But I mean, their creativity and the can-do attitude of seeing somebody that seems, you know, so foreign and so different, and then making something totally beautiful out of it. It's just, I mean, I find that to be really inspiring. I mean, I'm not saying that I necessarily always do that myself, but I mean, it's like, it's inspiring to see that, and I aim to do that. So,
Can you explain your role in managing the Sculpture Space Board of Trustees?
I don't manage them, they manage me. I work for them. That's how it is. I mean, seriously, but yeah. You know, I mean, again, it's like, people are people. I mean, that's what I say. It's like, and it's like, it's all about relationships. It's all about that. I mean, it's like, it makes no difference if you're managing a board of trustees, you're managing a group of artists, you're managing your kids in the park when they're young, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, people have their own interests, their own desires, their own ways of looking at things. And for me, I just find you know, again, that's why I kind of call myself a ringleader sometimes. It's like, you know, you kind of just try to find out where the pieces fit and make those connections. I mean, and that's what excites me the most, is saying, oh, there's a connection here. Let's get these two people together because this person wants to do this, this person is doing this, and so, you know, that kind of thing. It's beautiful. It is. Synchronicity. Yeah.
What are some obstacles you have encountered in your role?
Money. Money. It's all, I guess it's not about money at all, but it is about money. At the end of the day, it's like, how do you build an organization, grow an organization, and, you know, this is truly a shoestring budget in this organization. We have a very small budget, and I think it's kind of ideal in a lot of ways, because we're not encumbered by a lot of things, but it's also a challenge when you want to do something and you only have two people that are working in the office. You know, you can only do so much with so little, that's all. So it's a challenge.
What do some of those fundraising efforts look like?
Well, a big one, and it continues to get bigger and bigger each year. I don't know how we do it, but it continues to get exciting, is we close down our studio for an entire month. We do it only because we have to, because we take it from a functioning studio to a party pad, and we move all of our big machinery, and again, it's a process to watch. But everything gets moved aside, stored in corners or out of the way or taken away, and we open up the entire space, and it becomes an art auction. We clear out the rooms, you walk through the entire entire space, and it's the party of the century every year. And so I think that really, I mean, people come from all over, and it's nice.
You say there's people from all over. Is mostly Utica, or is it mostly people from all over?
I'd say mostly from the Mohawk Valley. I wouldn't say, you know, mostly from Utica. I would say, you know, people come from Herkimer. They come from, you know, your neck of the over in Cooperstown area. They come from, you know, all over the big Mohawk. You know, we've had people coming up from out of the area as well, from New York City and other places too. So, but yeah, and we've virtualized it since COVID. We've virtualized it, so it's now, the auction is now online for a good period as well. So.
Do you think having it online is beneficial for Sculpture Space? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'd say yes. I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, during COVID, it was a lifeline. If we didn't do it during COVID, we would not have had an auction, and that would have been. We had our best auctions, I think, ever. I mean, not ever, but our best auctions. Some of our best auctions were the ones that were virtual only.
Were the auctions a newer initiative, or have they been happening for a while?
The charity art auction, the charity art auctions have been happening probably for almost 35 years, and maybe even for almost 40 years now, and we're 50 year old, so